hey, if you're easily offended, then you know what? Never mind. Let's talk about it with Kyle Mann on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
And we are so glad you're here. I say it all the time because I mean it all the time. You always have a seat at our table. And by the way, I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Matthew Porter's here. He's our executive producer. The current supply chain issues. Everyone is running out of things, and Matthew is running out of patience. He also writes these jokes, and he's running out of good jokes, too.
Oh, man, I had one that was going to go right there.
What were you going to say when I said running out of patience?
I was just going to say I went through a drive-thru, and I got a milkshake, and they said, oh, by the way, we don't have any straws.
Why didn't you just ask for a spoon?
The next thing they said was, we're out of spoons. Absolutely true.
Stick a fork in it, I guess.
That'll
make a Republican out of you. I tell you, man, I can deal with all the other stuff, but when there are no spoons or straws with milkshakes, that's major. And our producer, Jinx, is in his little glass booth. Did you know that foie gras is when they force feed a duck until the liver explodes? At Jinx's house, they just call it Thanksgiving. Our video director.
Oh, my gosh. Matthew.
Man. I've gained a little weight, but goodness.
Our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. John loves falling back 1 hour. Darker earlier means more time for the Christmas lights, which as we speak, he's putting around his house. And Kyle, just so you know, nobody sees them because he lives in a gated community and you can't get in.
Not
but
true.
They are amazing. And Kathy Wyatt is the soft feminine side of this program. Kathy finds it refreshing that Matthew didn't feel the need to make these intros funny just because we have a real comedy writer on the program this time.
Hey, can I just tell you one thing about not having straws and all that kind of stuff? We had a board meeting here this weekend, and so I stopped at the bagel place to get bagels, and there were no tubs of cream cheese. And so I said to him, I said, what? And it was Einstein Bagels. It's a wonderful company. And they call their, you know, they call their cream cheese schmear. He said, we haven't had schmear in weeks. I said, tell me those are on barges out off the coast of Santa Monica. He said, you can't buy cream cheese. I went into the grocery store. You can't buy cream cheese. So, Matthew, don't be surprised if you can't buy a straw or get a straw.
Listen, last night,
what are you going to do with cream cheese on a barge?
I wanted to take her to the supermarket so she could get some cream cheese. And I said, honey, you can't. She said, what do you mean I can't? I said, there isn't any. Kathy tried. She said, I don't care. I'm going to look. She came back with a pile of it. And I said, either Kathy lied or you're more spiritual than she is.
Well, there you go.
Hey, listen, Kyle Mann is the editor-in-chief of the Babylon Bee. And if you haven't discovered that, you're missing out on one of the great delights of modern time. It's funny. It's profound. It'll make you think. It'll make you laugh. And it is so rare and wonderful. It's called the Babylon Bee. It's a satirical conservative and sometimes Christian news site. Founded in 2016, the Bee is a trusted voice in humor for a wide range of modern Christians. And Kyle's new book is called, and I would say I have it now in my nicotine-stained fingers. Only one copy came from the publisher because they're cheap. And no. Matthew got it.
No, all he the all smoke. The paper. All the paper is on the barges, on the barge, out in the Pacific Ocean outside Santa Monica.
That's what they're saying.
They can't get paid. Publishing companies can't get paper either. Go figure.
What is the name of the book?
Well, I'm going to tell you. Just wait a second. It's very long, and they had trouble getting it on the cover. My publisher would have died. The Babylon Bee Guide to Wokeness. How to Take Your Wokeness to the Next Level by Canceling Friends, Breaking Windows, and Burning It All Down to the Ground. That's a great title. I love that. You know, I've been reading it this morning. We did get a digital copy because so far they haven't kept the computers on those ships. And I felt like I was drinking from a fire hydrant. It was just so, well, and you know, as I was reading it, I thought of C.S. Lewis and the Screwtape Letters. He said that was the hardest book he ever had to write because he had to write it from the perspective of the dark side. There's a sense in which maybe this, although you've been doing it since the beginning, but to write a book that is a guide so I can be woke, and to do it with such skill and humor, that's got to be a little bit hard on occasion, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, you're right. Famously didn't want to write any more Screwtape Letters, and it completely drained him from writing from the voice of a demon. Because he says, if you try to write like a demon, you start to think like a demon. And there is something true to that, you know, not only from this book, but also writing satire for the Babylon Bee. You know, is that you start to look at situations and start to deconstruct them in your head. How can I turn this into a headline? You know, what's funny about this? And there's something good about that, right? Finding humor in situations. But we don't want to just deconstruct things for the sake of deconstruction either, because that's more of a progressive thing, is to constantly deconstruct and see through everything. And that's not what we want to do.
But occasionally, there's some things you wouldn't mind deconstructing, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of The Abolition of Man, C.S. Lewis says that the point of seeing through something is to see something through it. You know, we can't go on seeing through things forever. You know, so we don't want our satire to just always deconstruct everything. We want to deconstruct something to point people to something else. Mm. So I think that's the distinction, and that we try to walk that fine line while we're writing comedy.
Comedy covers a multitude of sins, doesn't it? It softens. It makes possible people to hear truth sometimes. Laughter is a good thing, not a bad thing. And, you know, I heard you on an interview saying that conservatives and Christians don't have a very good sense of humor. And I remember thinking, I don't agree with that. I graduated from a very liberal graduate school in Boston. And they're just this side of wacko liberal. And I mean, really weird. And that was the darkest place I've ever been in. I mean, they didn't laugh at anything. And it almost turned me sour being there. And when I got with my fundamentalist friends, and in those days they were fundamentalist and they had storefront churches, and I found reality there. I found truth most of the time, but I also found laughter, and I found that was refreshing. I think maybe what you do has opened the door for something that's been there for a long time, but you might disagree. So comment on that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think on the grassroots level, like, everybody knows that if you join a church, there's very funny stuff going on there and very funny people. But I think on a wide range in the world, struggle to release produced comedy or produced art, that doesn't feel too on the nose or, you know, cringy or it's always message first versus humor first. I think when we try to produce comedy, but I think you're right in that, you know, the kind of the stereotype of the Christians who are always glaring at you and judging you and frowning on you. I don't think that's as true as like Hollywood wants to believe. And really, in a lot of ways, the political left has become that. They have become that stereotype of the lecturing, judgmental, fundamentalist Christian. So I do think there's also an element here where there has been a shift over the years.
Christians, you know, you're hated, don't you?
Yeah.
I as an illustration of what we're talking about, you, they tried to take you off YouTube or something, one of the platforms you were on. And I remember thinking they can't take a joke. And that's a metaphor for what's going on in our culture.
Yeah, we've been taken off multiple platforms, all of them. So there's definitely an element there where they can't take a joke.
Hey, guys, this is going to be such a great hour. And I've been looking forward. All of us have been looking forward to it. And we appreciate Kyle taking time from the very busy schedule in order to be with us. By the way, the name of the book, and just do the Babylon Bee Guide to Wokeness, the subtitle, How to Take Your Wokeness to the Next Level by Canceling Friends, Breaking Windows, and Burning It All to the Ground. Like Jesus, we're coming back.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We're so glad you're here. We're hanging out with the author and Babylon Bee editor-in-chief, Kyle Mann. And for all the fake news fit to print, you ought to check out the Babylon Bee. Just so you know what goes on behind the scenes when the commercials are playing and we're trying to pay for this thing, we pray and fast and sing hymns if we have time. And if you believe any of that, you'll believe anything. The discussion in the off-air time was about Batman. And its founder, Matthew, noticed that Kyle has a what do you have in the background? I can't. It's a pretty study, poster. But I don't know. I didn't poster. Notice. What is it?
Poster.
Yeah, it's the.
I know that, but what poster?
The original 1989 Batman movie theater poster.
I yeah, just cool. wanted to
it's
give
a
you
big
a,
deal, Steve.
A chance it's a big deal. To brag and stuff.
Yeah.
Kathy.
Okay. Kyle, I think that sometimes people, especially believers, get, for lack of a better term, riled up about issues because they hear about it from somebody else who heard about it from somebody else and they don't really know all the ins and outs of the actual issues. So I have a 2-part question. Would you define for us wokeness? the whole thing and what's happening. And then after you do that, it sort of seems to me that when I first began hearing about it, it was sort of, some of it just seemed kind of ridiculously amusing, and yet it's become so mainstream now. What, based on its definition and how it has changed or whatever, what are your concerns about it?
I'm sorry, I'm only taking questions about Batman at this time.
That's perfect.
I mean, well, so that's part of the problem, right? Is that wokeness is a moving target, and it has evolved to become what it is today. And I can almost not define wokeness for you, despite having written a book on it. But what the main, I think, thrust of wokeness, if you want to call it that, is kind of a neo-Marxist way of looking at the world, where everything is divided into two classes, the oppressors and the oppressed. And everything in your life must be looked at through that lens. And that's what makes wokeness pervasive. That's what makes it dangerous. That's what makes it cause everybody so much misery, is because you can't just believe in wokeness in one area of your life. You have to get woke and change your entire mind about everything. And you can't enjoy any good things in life, you know, be it tobacco or beer or sports or, you know, church, the Bible. You can't enjoy anything at that point without looking at it through the lens of, you know, historical wrongs that were done, or whatever past mistakes have been made by mankind. And you can't enjoy the fact that we have arrived at, that we have eliminated so much injustice in our past. You have to instead just constantly beat yourself up and do better. And it really is a religion, except it's a religion with no forgiveness and no ultimate redemption.
True.
Okay. Wow.
It seems like it's kind of a dehumanizing thing. It's like, you're not a person. You're an aggregate of a bunch of different labels. You're a map function versus, you know, a person that goes beyond labels. It's kind of a bummer.
It's kind of a bummer. Yeah. I would call it kind of a bummer. Yeah.
Look for my new book. It's kind of a bummer.
Wokeness, kind of a bummer. It was kind of a bummer for the 100 million people who died under communism as well. I mean, that's kind of like, it ruins your whole weekend, you know, but you're absolutely right. It's like, it is, you know, we say oppressor oppressed. Part of that is you are part of a collective. You are your intersectional identity. You know, you are an old white man. I'm not talking about anyone in particular here. Just, you know, that was just a generalization.
Yes, but you are, and I'm sensitive.
You are not an individual or a person. You know, you are all these different things that are outside of your control, and that's the only thing you're identified as. Yeah, your class identity, racial identity, gender identity. And that's why we see all this insanity when it comes to, like, pronouns and picking your gender identity and all that.
And you're always the enemy. You don't ever even hear the other side, really.
You're an enemy unless you're an ally. And then if you're an ally, you're constantly walking on this fragile ground of not being an ally, right? You're always like, you're trying to always fight to the bottom to be the absolute most oppressed identity class possible. And if you screw up one time, you're back to square one, and it's starting the whole thing over. Yeah.
And how can you always say exactly the right thing? I mean, if you have two or three people in front of you, or even one person in front of you, you can't always say exactly the right thing that's going to make somebody else. I mean, you can think you're saying the right thing, but you don't. And then it's like, I didn't mean anything by that.
Yeah. Well, wow. I mean, we have in the book a section on microaggressions. What is a microaggression? That's part of what you're talking about, is anything you say, even if I see a person of color and I'm like, hey, good morning, you know, that's like, oh, well, actually, you know, it's not a good morning for the oppressed people of, you know, whatever. So there's always this layer where you're constantly walking on eggshells, and it's almost a game to people who have bought into this is try to find as many offensive things as possible rather than being grateful for what we have. And you know, if you have an issue with somebody, just working it out person to person, you're always looking at class versus class. I think that's what makes this deadly and dangerous and anti-gospel.
And it feels like in the face of this, there's only a couple camps. Either you engage this and fight it and try to change minds, which you can, and there's a role for that, and it's exhausting, or you just let it roll over you, and you just feel small, and you know, you're like, oh man, maybe I'm a terrible person, or you know, am I the only one who thinks this is crazy? And that's why when there's content like your book in the Babylon Bee, it's like a cold drink of water. You're like, I'm not crazy. I'm not the only one that finds this, that we've entered into the realm of the absurd. So it's a ministry. It really is.
I think that is a large part of the appeal, both of the Babylon Bee Guide to Wokeness and the Babylon Bee in general, is people going, oh, I'm not the only one. I'm not crazy. And there are other people out there who think like I do. And it's okay to share that.
Oh, and you do, and with great skill. There's another way to deal with all of this. It's to be old as dirt and not give a rip. And so when I offend somebody, I smile and say, I meant to. I'm glad I hit that nail on the head because you deserved it. When you're not doing stuff for your career, you're your own boss, you just don't care. Always listen to the old people because they'll tell you the truth. And the truth is that our guest is right on. And we'll talk to him more on the other side of the break.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Hey, thanks for joining us. If you're the type person who never forgets how much God loves them, you definitely don't need our weekly email. But if you do need on occasion a reminder now and then, make sure you check out keylife.org/subscribe. And when you subscribe, you get 3 free sins. But we've had it on good authority that you're way behind, so you might want to subscribe for all of your friends, too.
Kathy, a couple weeks ago, had sent us an interview. I don't know if it was transcripts or if it was a written interview with MSN, and really loved it because you were very direct and honest. And by the time they ask you that direct about the third joke, you're like, I'm not going to deconstruct every single joke that you don't get. It's not going to accomplish anything. But he or she did eventually get to a really interesting question, which was, what is the role of sarcasm or mocking or humor? Is that not antithetical or counter to the Bible, which is just full of, you know, good people and good stories and all these kinds of things? If we dig, will we find humor or mocking? Does that have a role in telling the truth?
Yeah, well, first off, the way that she asked that question was kind of weird, you know, because she goes, well, who would Jesus have made fun of? And to me, it's like, I don't know that that's the question I need to answer for myself. Like, I don't know, the whole what would Jesus do thing is so weird on a lot of levels. You know, like if you're a plumbing supply salesperson, you're like, would Jesus have sold this 90 degree elbow? You know, it's like that's not the question the Christian is supposed to ask, right? I mean, obviously we're supposed to be in line with Christ's teachings and his heart, and we're supposed to follow his commands, but how that works out in our life, you know, we don't ask the question, would Jesus have done this exact specific thing? You know, no, Jesus wouldn't have been running a satire website. He would have been going to the poor and calling people to repentance. You know, that's what he would have been doing. On another level, inherent in the question is this idea that humor is anti-Christian or mocking is anti-Christian. You should not mock. Well, the Bible is full of examples of people who have mocked different targets. And then part of the question too is, you know, who should you make fun of? Like, you should only, there's this kind of this punching up, punching down dichotomy, which I think it's part of this wokeness thing is there's certain oppressed classes you cannot make fun of, and then there's oppressor classes, and it's only real comedy if you're punching up at those classes. Well, this isn't true in the Bible. When you look at mockery in the Bible, they make fun of everybody. I mean, it really what it does is it mocks bad ideas, it mocks sin, it mocks flaws, it mocks hypocrisy. Here's a few quick examples. In the book of Proverbs, there's a beautiful proverb where it says that the sluggard is so lazy that he reaches into the food dish and he doesn't have the energy to pull his hand back out. You know, and I'm like, oh, I've been there. You know, like hand in the bowl of Cheetos and I'm too tired to lift it to my mouth. You know, that's hilarious. And it's not, there isn't any oppressed, you know, oh, he's mocking the religious leader. You know, no, it's like making fun of you. You know, there's something great about that. You can look at Isaiah where he talks about idol worship and he says, he's conveying the word of the Lord. And he says, you know, the idol carver goes out into the woods and he chops down a tree. He uses one half to create a god to worship, and he uses the other half to make a fire, and then he cooks beans on top of it, you know, or whatever. And it's like, how does he know that he didn't get it wrong? And he's accidentally worshiping firewood, and oops, he burned his god. You know, it's hilarious, and it is, and it's making fun of like who would have been poor farmers, you know, Israelites, for worshiping these cheap little gods that they made in the woods. That's fantastic. Of course, you have the famous Elijah mocking the prophets of Baal, and he says, you know, you think maybe your God's on the toilet? Like, that's why he's not coming down. He must be relieving himself. You know, maybe we should go knock on the porta potty door and maybe we could get him. You know, it's fantastic. You look at Jesus, he mocks the Pharisees. You know, there's a lot of funny stuff in the way that he calls out, like, the woman at the well, you know, who would have been, again, oppressed. And he's like, oh, yeah, where's your husband? You know, there's kind of like, oh, you got five husbands? Interesting. You know, like, I think there is kind of this element of sarcasm and mockery in Jesus's the way that he would call out his opponents as well. So it's all over. I also don't want to speak too highly and say, I am just like the prophets. You know, I'm trying to make people laugh ultimately. But I think there is definitely precedent in the Bible for that kind of thing.
So good. You know, yeah. You were talking about how you have to walk on eggshells if you're part of the cool kids, and you can crush them and be on the other side very quickly. And I thought of Eric Hoffer, the late longshoreman philosopher, who in a different context, but it applies here, said he was worried about the other side. And the guy said, why? They've got the power. And Eric Hoffer said, those who crucify get crucified last. And I think we're seeing some of that going on. I mean, all of a sudden, the people that were a part of the cool kids, the woke group, those end up being on the other side very quickly. I want you to address that when we get back. But we do have to leave and come back because this is very hard work, and we have periodic naps and we have cookies and milk, and then fortified we always return. The title of the book, at least the short title of the book, is The Babylon Bee Guide to Wokeness. If you're depressed and down and it's raining where you are or snowing, get it. You'll rise up and call me blessed for recommending it. irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Hey, thanks for being here. You always have a place at our table. Next time you're shopping on Amazon, real Christians don't do that, but if you do, you can help Key Life and offend the devil at the same time. At no extra cost to you, check the KeyLife.org/AmazonSmile, and you can learn how you can do that. And we would appreciate it if you did do it. Kyle, I brought the subject up because I am self-righteousness. I get that. And so do we all, but it's very addictive. I think a lot of what's going on in our culture right now can be described as something that's built into our DNA. Self-protective, ego, self-righteousness. I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm good, and you're evil. And even when I say that sort of thing, I feel kind of good. And that's dangerous, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, you're right. It is an age-old thing. You know, we always are trying to divide people into us versus them. And I think this is just the latest version of that. You know, we kind of make a joke in the book that the first woke person was Satan because the snake in the garden, because he tells Eve, you know, "Oh, you're actually oppressed. You're a victim here. You know, you have all these blessings, but you don't have that," you know? And I think there is an element of that in wokeness that we see today. You know, there is jealousy, there's envy, there's self-righteousness. And we were talking about how, you know, the people who start the crucifixions, they still get crucified. But they get crucified last, right? And I think that we see that, you know, that is true of wokeness. You know, that's kind of, you saw that they like rolled out the big guillotine outside Jeff Bezos' house or something, you know, like, oh, I'm like, you know what happens to the people who have the guillotine, right? it's coming for you eventually. You're just at the end of the line. I think we don't see that element. You don't get it. But if you do look at wokeness, it's already happening. You know, the snake eats its own tail. I think we had mentioned earlier, J.K. Rowling, you know, who was just a progressive icon, and wow, this brave, powerful feminist woman writes this story that, you know, it seems like it's the only book the left has ever read. And, you know, and then she gets canceled because she says, you know, I think men shouldn't compete against women in sports, you know, and all of a sudden she is the enemy and the bad guy and the oppressor. And it suddenly shifted her. She's given up all of her intersectional credits and all of her identities, and now she's an oppressor. And so it is this self-righteous us versus them binary where you're either for us or against us. And that's really dangerous.
And if you should say that she has a point, that'll happen to you very, very quickly. Do you think the thing's going to die? The thing that worries me is that when woke people get real power, they can do some really damaging things. And I hope they crucify each other before they get to vote. But I don't know. What do you think?
I just write jokes on the internet, man. I don't know, but I.
That's so great.
If I can, if I can wax poetic, I mean, I think I've been rereading Lord of the Rings, which I reread every year or two. And one of the main lessons is that there are things in our control and there are things out of our control. There are these like threads of fate that are going around us, the grand sweep of history. And we may not be able to control that. We may be along for the ride on a lot of this stuff, you know? And so is wokeness going to continue destroying the country and continue in this downward spiral? Maybe. And if it is, that sucks, you know, but we're going to do what we can in our power. And that was, you know, what Frodo asked Gandalf is, what must I do? And Gandalf says, you know, all we can do is decide what to do with the time that is given to us, you know, and that's it. You know, that's it. Yeah. If you're a mother, you'd be a great mother. If you're a father, be a great father. You know, if you're a writer, write stuff that fights that battle and create good, true and beautiful things. And that's all we can do, you know, and I think there's a peace and a comfort in that, knowing that God is sovereign and in control. And for us, we're going to do our duty. We're going to do our part. If wokeness destroys our country, well, guess what? It's going to die out someday. I mean, it is self-defeating. It will die. I don't know if it'll die tomorrow or if it'll die in 100 years. But good will win in the end. And there's another, sorry if I keep talking about Lord of the Rings, but there's another part where Sam and Frodo are in Mordor and they're like, they think they're going to die. And Sam looks up and he sees a star poking through the clouds. And he says, oh, there is, he said, the line is, he realized that there was light and high beauty forever beyond the reach of the shadow. I mean, it's God wins in the end. So if wokeness wins this particular battle, which kind of seems like they might, right? We thought the woke people, you know, we always told the young people, right? Like, oh, you know, once you get out of college, the real world is going to beat you up and you're going to try to get a job and you're going to realize that's all garbage. Well, the problem is they went out and they took over the HR systems and the companies and the entertainment companies and all of that. So they went out and became the people that we thought were really going to beat them up. So that's the concerning part, I think. But I do think there's hope. I mean, it is self-defeating. It can't last. That's for sure.
Writing has a tendency to be addictive. This is your first book, right?
This is our third book. We wrote
How to Be
No, it's all good. We wrote How to Be a Perfect Christian. Nobody bought it, so that's fine. We wrote How to Be a Perfect Christian, where we skewered church culture. We have a collection called The Sacred Texts of the Babylon Bee, which is a couple years of our content compiled in a beautiful Bible-like volume. And then we have this one. We also just turned in a book. Me and my managing editor, Joel Berry, are working on a modern retelling of The Pilgrim's Progress. It is addicting. We keep writing stuff like this.
Listen, we're running out of time, but before we go, do you handle criticism well?
No, not at all.
No, you don't.
I'm just kidding.
You put on the mask of, it doesn't bother me, but it does.
I think most criticism, because it comes from a place where I'm like, I can just see where the person's coming from and it doesn't bother me. The criticism that gets to you most is someone that you love and respect and you know enjoys your work. And then they're like, I don't like that. And you're like, okay, well, I listen to your voice and I respect that. It should hurt a little bit, right? When someone that's a trusted voice in your life criticizes you a little bit. But yeah, people from the left, it's like, whatever, I don't care.
It's important to people who don't like you. You can take that and to the bank and cash it. And that's worth a whole lot to our emotional health. Kyle, you do a good thing, man. You really do, for a lot of people, and I'm one of them. And one of the good things you did, and it was reasonably selfish because we have so many millions of listeners, you came on this program in the midst of a very busy schedule. Thank you, and I hope we can do it again.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Kyle.
Hey, guys, we're going to come back and tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. And by the way, get this book. You just got to get this book for your own sanity. The Babylon Bee Guide to Wokeness, How to Take Your Wokeness to the Next Level by Canceling Friends, Breaking Windows, and Burning It All to the Ground. And Matthew was just holding it up in his non-nicotine stained fingers. And we're out of here, but we're going to come back. And the last section is the sterling one. Don't go anywhere.
Hi.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, what a great hour. We really do. We just met him, but we really like him and we like what he does. You know, if you're a Christian, you don't laugh much because this is serious business and everybody's going to hell except Christians, and the world is crazy, and the pagans are winning, and the media is biased, and Hollywood is trying to do the work of the devil, et cetera, et cetera. You maybe ought to reconsider your relationship with Christ. I have found, and I've been doing this a very long time, when there's no laughter, Jesus leaves the building. He really does. And one of the signs of his presence is the laughter that you hear among God's people. I've just turned in the manuscript, except one chapter, which I'm writing right now, that's titled Laughter and Lament, The Touchstones of Radical Freedom. And I've discovered a lot about me in writing this book, and a lot about you, and a lot about the church. And at the heart of it is the laughter you hear at a Christian funeral, or a diagnosis of cancer, or a great loss of a job or somebody you love. Whenever you hang out with Christians, there's laughter, and there's often guilt that follows the laughter. How could I laugh about something like this? Listen, that's God's gift. And somebody like Kyle and the Babylon Bee, and they make fun of us too. I mean, they say some stuff that we need to hear and that's funny about us. But you ought to check out that. If you Google Babylon Bee, you can get to their website, and there you can sign up to their newsletter. And they send our email list, and they send an email almost every morning. And I found that Jesus and coffee and the Babylon Bee email are all good ways to start the day. Kathy, are you, who's going to be on next week?
Well, next week we're going to do a re-air. We had several months ago, we had our friend Dr. Ray Ortlund on the program, and he talked about his book, The Death of Porn, Men of Integrity Building a World of Nobility. Isn't that a great title? But we just got so much positive response and feedback from that. We just thought it was well worth airing it again. So,
and it's not what you usually hear about pornography.
Don't miss it this time.
It's really different. Don't miss it if you missed it the first time. We're out of here. We won't be here. Well, we will be here, but it'll be a re-air, and we'll be here. Napping and stuff. So hope you join us next week, same time, same place. And between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. That really does give you a wide, wide berth.